Farm equipment, just about any kind of vehicle, we can take care of it. Just call 1-855-KPFT-CAR now or visit kpft.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Tranquil beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Wednesday, 8 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, and it's only right here on KPFT 90.1 Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, and along with the best team on radio, Drs. Warren Holloman and Mary Edgerton, Greg Audell, and our engineer and media expert, Tatiana Gago, we bring you astonishing stories every week, told by tellers whose narratives take us on journeys through windows of their souls and excursions into the fanciful worlds of folktales before bringing us back safely to the present. You know, a quick but essential alert, KPFT programs are going to shift a bit next week to improve program flow, and we will move from this 8 o'clock time slot to Thursdays at 8. Same time, different day, fabulous stories, guaranteed. And you know, there are a lot of reasons to be proud of our show, but serving as an icon for community radio sits on the top of the list. Common folks with uncommon stories to tell have fueled this studio for years, but it's our kids who routinely make that enduring impression that keeps us inviting them back. And tonight, thanks to our friend and past guest several times over, Paul Topekian, we've gathered some superlative exchange students with original stories about cross-cultural episodes drawn from their impressions of the human experience. They are Audrey Dygard, Mario Depavia, Pooh Lert Pintupin, Maddie Pothelwaite, Pearl Tong Thong, Ola Verhul, and Adolfo Vega. I probably screwed some of those up, but you know what? I came close. Right, guys?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah, you are.
Thank you for lying. Okay. Happy New Year to all of you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Listen, a lesson to everyone. Know how to pronounce a person's name. Don't guess. If you don't know, ask. Names speak to our heritage. They have meaning, like pearls. Pearl's true name, Hait Taitanit, deserve some attention. Hatai means heart, and Tanit is her dad's name. Together, my father's heart. Utterly beautiful. She's from Bangkok, Thailand, is a junior at Lamar. You eat at the Basket of Robins across the street?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. Just checking. Loves reading and is a big Harry Potter fan. Loves singing, watching movies, and taking photos. And I love what your name says, Pearl. How would you describe your dad to someone who never met him?
I would say he's a very a provider guy, patient, hardworking, reliable, supportive, kind, and he's a hero.
And that's great. Other than hero, he sounds like a Honda. But nevertheless, he is a magnificent person.
Yes.
And, you know, our names say so much. We always talk about names as really being an impetus behind storytelling, and I know that yours is. You're also a movie buff. Have you got a favorite film?
Definitely Harry Potter.
Really?
Yes.
Harry Potter. What do you like about the movie? I know you love the book, but
yeah,
what is
I love
it about the,
books.
The movie?
I mean, it's great, but the book's better. Yeah.
Yeah. What makes the book better?
I don't know. I feel into the books more.
Okay.
Then the movies. And,
get a little more absorbed by the reading.
Yes.
Good. Listen, I'm going to start with you because it's familiar. And your story has some familiar grounds, I should say. Your story is about coming to Houston, kind of, sort of. Although that's kind of an interesting top spin as well. To live your dream of visiting NASA.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
So, as a young girl growing up in Bangkok, I used to read and collect a Japanese series of comic books called Space Brothers. It was about two brothers who went to NASA, and the story takes place mostly in Houston, Texas. Even as a child, I was eager to be an international person, and that is why I wanted to know English very well. I've been to several places around the world, and with each experience, gained happiness and understanding of people and their culture. This made me want to explore this mysterious and wondrous world even more. So I decided to apply for the AFS exchange program. When I first knew that I was accepted to go study abroad in the United States for a year as an AFS exchange student, I was wildly excited, but also worried about meeting the deadlines for confirmation and completing all the paperwork as I was on the plane to Japan when I received my acceptance email. Could I complete all the paperwork needed in the necessary time? Well, in the end, everything was accomplished on time just fine, but I had some nervous moments. After I submitted a bunch of paperwork and a recording about myself, I was waiting for months for further information. I knew I had a placement in America, but all kinds of questions were in my head about what state would I be in, what kind of family would I be placed with, how will I travel there, what kind of school will I be attending. I checked my email every single day, learned that I would be departing in August, but I did not know where my destination until 3 weeks before my departure. When on one Thursday morning in July, I unexpectedly got an email with the subject, host family notification. I exploded with excitement and quickly clicked to have a look. As soon as I saw the first word in that document, I went even more crazy. I was buzzing around and jumping on my bed. My mom, who was with me, asked, "What?" All I yelled was, "Houston, that's where the Space Brothers went." I was so glad and amazed. Who knew that from reading comic books at a young age, and Japanese ones at that, I would someday come to live here. That's a pretty good start for going global. But getting here wasn't so simple. I flew from Bangkok to Dubai, and then Dubai to Dallas. I needed to wait for a couple of hours at Dallas, and my other AFX exchange friends were all asleep. We almost missed the flight. I was very excited and nervous the entire flight to Houston. When we landed, I said, "Yes, I'm finally here in Houston, y'all." Thinking of the same picture in my mind from the first time Muta, a guy from the cartoon, stepped into Houston. But it turned out it wasn't Houston. After all, I mean, it was in Austin. I was confused and couldn't understand what the captain was saying. Later, I knew from asking other passengers that it was about bad weather in Houston. We waited 2 hours before we finally took off, worrying whether anyone from AFS knew anything about this. But ultimately, we made it back to Houston, and I met the most wonderful host family for the first time. And to top it all off, in October, I got to go to NASA, and it was super incredible. I'm just so glad that I chose to walk out of my comfort zone and so lucky to be here. I just couldn't believe how a kid's dream from a comic book could become an amazing real-life adventure in this awesome city, Houston.
Beautiful. All right. Thank you. Well, you know, you're incredibly articulate, and I have a feeling you're not the only one here that I can say that about. That's amazing. Was NASA everything that you expected it to be?
Not really, because in the book, it's kind of like more like real astronaut, but the NASA that I went to, it was like kind of an exhibition for,
right?
Yeah,
but you weren't disappointed.
Yeah, I love it.
What do you want to do when you get out of school eventually?
I want to further my education in international business because
what would you like to do with that?
I'm not sure yet, but I really into international business, and I really want to be an international person.
That's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. You know, every story has a lesson, kind of, sort of. Yeah. They all have parables, and there are several in here that I hear. What is one thing that you want listeners to take from your story?
Great things never came from comfort zones. Step out and open your mind to new beginnings.
Wow. Great things never come from comfort zones. That is so beautifully, beautifully, beautifully put. Wow. Adolfo is from northern Spain and loves traveling, soccer, and tennis. He attends the Energy Institute High School, the first high school devoted to preparing students for careers in the energy field. And, you know, to Adolfo, what do you plan on doing with the energy field?
Well, I've always been interested in making renewable energy more affordable and more accessible in developing countries.
God bless you. Yeah, God bless you for that. I didn't know anything about the Energy Institute, by the way. I had to look this up. Pretty interesting school.
Yeah, I didn't know that much about it either.
How'd you find out about it?
It's my host brother's school, so I kind of got, like, I had no choice, but I'm really happy for being there.
You've traveled around. Where else have you traveled?
Well, although it's my first time in America, it's like, I've been to many European countries, as you can get to them, like, driving a few hours.
So, the first American city you visited is Houston.
Well, I went to Dallas. That's the airport the first American place I actually saw, but yeah, I'd say it's Houston where I actually saw the city and all.
Now, your story is kind of a fun story. You and I chatted about it a little earlier. It's about language interpretations and how they influence your view of Americans. Tell us your story.
So it's already been 6 months here, speaking only English. Well, I started learning English when I was 4, so that's pretty much 12 years learning English. When I came here, I was pretty fluent, but I had some funny and strong Irish accent, and it was still not perfect. Also, there were some misunderstandings, which were really funny. You know, could you define to be embarrassed?
To be embarrassed is to be self-conscious about the behavior in which you're involved, wanting to be appropriate.
Well, you would find it funny to know that estar embarazado in Spanish, embarazado, means being pregnant.
Wow. So you don't want to go up to somebody and say, are you embarrassed?
Yeah, many misunderstandings with that. Also, you know, constipation.
Right.
Well, constipado means having a cold in Spanish.
Having a cold. Wow. Yeah, so if you don't know that, you're picking up the wrong medications for somebody. Huh?
Definitely,
yeah,
definitely.
That's for sure, yeah. Very good.
My story is kind of... Well, it started when I came here, when I came to school, because there's a huge Latino community in my energy. So I could see, I would try to start a conversation with them. And I could tell they were speaking some kind of weird blend of Spanish and English. I figured out the main causes could have been the unique words you kind of translate. There are many words in both Spanish and English that are used unique and their meaning cannot be translated. And also their bilingual environment, which requires some kind of brain switch to be able to speak two languages with no time in between. That's Spanglish, and it's pretty curious because Spanish has nothing to do with English. They're not related. So, yeah, well, my experience started, as I said, after arriving to Dallas. I was exhausted, and I had been listening to a lot of English, but finally I heard a couple speaking Spanish. I was really happy. So, I could understand everything, but then I started hearing some really weird stuff. They mentioned parquear, which is bird park, but the thing is, it's some kind of Hispanicized verb. And there's many more examples, like hanguear, which is something I had never heard, and they had to explain it to me. It comes from hang out. Same goes with lonche, which is essentially lunch. So, yeah, it's really curious how Latino people will make up words. Also, it was weird at first, as I said, speaking to other Hispanics. But after some time, I actually started doing it myself. I started mimicking their behavior. Right now my Spanish is really strong, and it has changed a lot. When I speak to my friends, they find it really funny. And I have a really strong South American accent, And it's something my friends back in Spain find really, really funny. It's really different, by the way. It has nothing to do. Also, I've lost most of my slang, so I feel like I would take months to get it all back. My brain is like 50% Spanish and 50% English. It's really weird. Also, another really funny story was in New Year's Eve. I called my parents. You know, New Year's Eve is a really big deal back in Spain. It's like a huge tradition to eat 12 grapes at midnight on New Year's Eve. So I started talking to them in, like, I was rushing, and I stopped, and my parents were looking at me weirdly, and I was like, what's wrong? And they totally didn't understand me. My Spanish sounded funny to them, and although we laughed at it, I think it was not a big deal. And, well, overall, it's a really curious thing that happened to me, and it's a really interesting cultural blend, because it's like a huge example of how easily you can change something as basic as language. And along with the experience, it has definitely changed my life.
You know, I know for a fact, unfortunately, that people in this country don't speak their language nearly as well as natives in other countries. It's unfortunate. Sorry, Tatiana, it's true. You know, Tatiana happens to be very articulate, but, you know, most Americans, native-born Americans, really don't know English nearly as well as they think they do. And, you know, it's fascinating because sometimes the English language is extraordinarily unique, because there are regions of this country that really do create tremendous language misinterpretations for others. You know, for example, there are some. If you go to Boston, if you walk into a Boston bookstore, their dictionaries are thinner because they don't use the letter R. Only kidding. But, you know, for example, you have a sentence like park your car. They will say back your car. They don't even move their mouth. It's an incredible way of speaking English. Right. I remember sitting in Logan Airport once many years ago, and through the PA system, I hear, I was about to get the Chevy to park your car. And I'm thinking, what was that exactly? And interestingly enough, there was a person in that waiting area who picked up his valise and said, I think that's my car. And I stopped him and I asked, how do you know that exactly? Because listening is as acultural as speaking. So you listen to language, you speak language, and that kind of familiarity really becomes a merger.
Yeah.
Lot of great stuff in your story as well, Adolfo. What's the one most important message that you want us to know?
Well, I'd say it's the fact that life can change so radically in a little amount of time. It's only been 6 months, and my brain, it works in a totally different way.
Your brain's working great. You've got a great sense of meaning of words, by the way. That's an important comment. Think mm-hmm. about that.
Thanks.
We might get to that a little bit earlier. I mentioned a little earlier that we have Paul Topekian to thank for assembling these outstanding young people. And Paul, I wish we had more time to talk about the necessity in supporting exchange programs, but you represent the best of this support model. Well, what inspired you to host exchange students?
Well, Hank, our family had the opportunity to spend 3 years living in Guatemala, which was just a wondrously rich experience for all of us, and especially for our two daughters, Emily and Chantria. So when a neighbor asked if we might be interested in hosting an exchange student, it just seemed like the right thing for us to do, to be able to help in sharing, you know, that same type of experience with a visitor from another country.
Well,
and then you get the benefit mm-hmm. of having another kid in your family,
yeah.
which... It's
That's magnificent. It really is. This is just a great group, just a wonderful group. How long have you been involved with exchange students?
Ooh, I think it was 2010 when we hosted our first. And yeah. Pooh is the sixth addition to our yeah. family. So
wow.
it's been quite fun.
It's a tough question, but in your experience, you know, what is our society's greatest benefit from endorsing student exchange programs?
Well, it seems like Americans carry a lot of assumptions and misconceptions about, you know, other people and other cultures. And to me, there's no better way to kind of address those, kind of get rid of them and get reality on the table than to have these person-to-person contacts.
Yeah. You know, AFS is the organization responsible for some of the exchanges. And I was astonished to learn the acronym came from American Field Service ambulance drivers who volunteered in both World Wars. You know, give them a 20-second plug.
Hank, AFSUSA sends approximately 1,000 students abroad and welcomes 2,200 international high school students here in the U.S. Host families provide a bed and meals, and they share their daily lives and help guide and support students as they would their own children. So if anybody out there is listening and they're either interested in hosting a student or studying abroad or volunteering with AFS here in the Houston area, give a call to 832-627-7705 or visit them on the web at www.afsusa.org.
And I will do a step even better. For those of you who didn't catch that number and is interested in contacting Ball, just reach us at story@kpft.org, just story@kpft.org, and one of us will respond and get that information to you. Well said, Paul. Thank you. You know, our next teller is a young man that you are currently hosting. So why not introduce him? Why not? Go for it.
So we've got Pooh coming up next, and he's from Bangkok also, just like Pearl. He's a avid Rockets fan. I think he wants to be a sports commentator in the future, and he's really into rap.
Well, thank you. And you know what? I'm glad you're going to be a sports commentator, because I want you to look inside your crystal ball, Pooh. Are the Rockets going anywhere this year?
Okay, so...
Oh, boy, here we go. We're getting an assessment. Go
okay,
ahead.
So this for now, the performance of like James Harden, who is an MVP star, is pretty good. He performed like a lot of points and basically a man of the... MVP in many games. Also with a bench warmer like Gerald Green and Daniel House Jr., who is a great addition coming at the bench. So yeah, Rockets will finally meet the playoffs.
You think so?
Yeah, obviously.
Are they going to get past the first round, Pooh?
Obviously.
Obviously? Okay. Spoken like a true fan. I am not nearly as optimistic as you, but then again, I've been rooting for the Cleveland Browns all my life, so what in the world would I possibly know? Now, you implied, one of the things, we're going to talk about this implication later, but your story, in my judgment, is enticing because it's about an experience on a Metro bus. This is one thing I love about all your stories. The features are so incredibly unique and focused, but it's about a Metro bus, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so, all right. Some people may take seconds or minutes to think that they're in the new place. But for me, however, it took me days and weeks to realize that, oh my God, I'm in Houston. The reason for this is because from the surface, right, Houston and Bangkok, it's a similar place due to the weather and the landscape. But the first moment, though, that I realized that I am in Houston is the transportation. So basically, in Thailand, you see motorcycle and taxi literally everywhere. But it looked like, well, those things aren't exist in Houston. So the main transportation here is the Metro bus. So the first moment I quickly caught on to the transition of the bus, that the bus here is different from Thailand. Not only the design, but also the interior and the system itself too. But still, to me, right, I still think that it's just a normal bus, same to the rest of the world, until one day I realized that the bus in USA is a bit special. So one day after school, we are in the bus. The people is very crowded because the school is just over and people want to go home, obviously. So that day, there was an old man that didn't want to share. He's important. He looked just like a normal old man. But the first red flag that I caught on from this guy, and he just asked a girl that entered the bus at the same time as I did to sit next to him. The girl said, nah, couple of time. But he still insists the girl to sit with him. Which is weird, because the girl is about 16, where the guy is about 60. And he seemed really wanted the girl to sit with him. But the real thing is because like when a lot of people is in the bus, and for some reason, the old man, he get pumped up. He start talking to people inside the bus enthusiastically. He started about how music today is like not different, and the back in his day he's listening to a real music. And instead of ignoring him, thinking he's a weirdo, no, they respond by asking him to sing a song of like one of his day. I was surprised. because in Thailand, right, people in the bus and the train are the most uninteractive group of people you can find on Earth. And we respond, well, he get excited. He did something unexpectedly. So he start off by singing the song to the entire bus, which then people went nuts. I think that, well, this man may not be as weird as I think he is. But then he said to the other girl on the bus that, quote, "If I have waited, you would have been my wife." In which the whole bus go, what? Because the age gap is very crazy. They are about 50 years apart. But still, even though that he look and act like a pedophile, nobody told him to stop. Which surprised me even more. And then he doesn't stop, obviously. He keeps saying that the people around him are his wife. Some just laugh and thought it was a joke. Some of them, however, is not happy and respond in a more rude way. And you may be thinking, well, there's a lot of weird people like that all over the world. Well, I hear some in Thailand too. But hear me out. Normally, this behavior of saying that thing, seriously or not, is not common in Thailand, especially in the public place, like bus. And if you do so, well, you get screwed. Well, now the old man get more excited and more energetic. He starts saying something that is more rude, more offensive, and start talking in a more sensitive manner, in which I can't even say here on the radio show. Well, there was the other girl sit next to me, and she was seemed unsecure and terrified. She said to her friend, like, "Get me out of this bus." She looking forward to the next stop, which she regularly get out, which is coincidentally the same spot that I do. Well, when the next stop come, I jump out of the bus because in my mind, similar to that girl, I need to get out of there before things get out of control, because there was the other old man who's ready to fight that first guy because he said something very sensitively. Yeah. So when we finally get out of the bus, I walk and said to the girl and her friend that, "What in the world is that?" The bus driver is pretty calm though. He did do nothing to the man. He didn't do anything. Or the people in the bus. But in his head, I think that he's absolutely mad. The way he controlled by silence though, I respect him. So after that, I not only learned that the American people is sometimes weird on the bus, but also, a bus driver is a challenging job. You never know who enter your bus, and I thank you every day from driving me to school. Thank you.
You know, I liked you so much a few minutes ago. I really did. I liked you so much a few minutes ago. How old do you think I am? Never mind. I don't want to know. I thought people in your culture respected elders. The old guy who's 60. I'm older than 60. Are you aware of that?
I'm aware of that.
But you said it anyway. Wait a minute. How could you possibly be aware of that? Would you check my driver's license? Okay.
I like
this guy, but then again, I'm not normal. Nice story. I love it. I'm not so sure that this country is unique in terms of the metro, because many other cities have such better transportation systems. When the metro rail, when the train first started, the old joke was that you need to take the train because it's the only way to avoid being hit by one. That was the old joke at the time. Right. And I love you anyway, despite the fact that you think I'm really, really old and sick and senile and mentally ill and every other kinds of thing. No, I know. So what do you want us to know from this story?
So I want to know that not only that you need some people are diversity and some may get on the bus that you go or the same thing that mm-hmm. you walk on the same road or just sit in there eating at the same restaurant. So you need to be aware all the time and also you need to stay calm like the bus
Beautiful.
Driver.
Love it. Now Ola attends Waltrip and she's from North Netherlands in the middle of a farmer's province. Back home, she gets around by biking, walking, and taking the train and not listening to Pooh's mode of transportation. She loves a skateboard, which she calls longboarding, but claims to be having a hard time finding friends who likes to do that, really?
Yeah, I've found a few, but yeah, I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, strange. It's one of the reasons she wanted to go to school in a big city. I love the subject of your story, Ola, celebrating your first Halloween in a Texas haunted house. However, I did a little research and found that the Dutch do celebrate Halloween, but they celebrate it on November 11th, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And why the 11th?
There's a story that there was this high status knight named St. Martin, and he was following a trail with some of his friends on a really cold winter night, and going along this trail, they eventually came by an old homeless man begging for food and some spare change along the road.
Love it.
And though all his friends scoffed at the man, St. Martin got off his horse and tore his red cape in half so the man could be warm, and the man was the embodiment of God eventually. Whew. So that's how he became a saint.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. Tell us the story about your first American Halloween.
Yeah, okay. Well, I made a brand new friend in October, and we were planning on hanging out, and he told me he'd take me on a surprise adventure, and I eventually found out we would be going to the scariest haunted house in Texas. I was terrified. When I was a little kid, my mom once took me to this toddler haunted house, and I was so scared I bursted out crying, and I promised myself to never ever go in a haunted house again. Which was a solid plan as a 5-year-old, but still weighed heavy 11 years later. So yeah, I'm not the person that likes anything like that, or scary stuff, or horror movies, so I was stressing out. So I was thinking, you're telling me that this boy I have never really talked to is taking me to the embodiment of the one low-key childhood trauma I actually have? Okay. Anyone who knows me knows I'm always up for a good adventure, so turning that down was never an actual option, but I was a little bit stressed. So we first headed over to downtown to kill some time before going to the haunted house. And we went to Discovery Green because Google said there was some fun stuff to do there. And we walked around for a little bit. We found some live music we hung around for. And because it was Halloween time, there was this huge costume contest going on. And we stayed around for a bit, cheering on little kids in spacesuits and dogs that were dressed up as cupcakes. But besides Discovery Green, we essentially just ran around downtown like idiots, getting onto the top floor of every hotel we could get into to look at the view of the sun going down and enjoying the warm Texas fall. Generally, just enjoying our time being stupid teens. So after we strolled around downtown for a bit, waiting for the haunted house to open, we headed over to the dreaded main activity of the night. Saying I was shaking on my legs was an understatement. We went in to buy some tickets, and when we stepped foot into the closed-off area is one of the best memories I now fondly look back on began. We ended up having so much fun, and though he's gonna probably kill me for saying it, the boy I was with definitely was more scared than me at times. At some point in the night, we walked past this dressed-up actor who looked totally awesome, so I screamed out, "Wow, she looks so cool!" Which was an absolutely horrible decision as she started to actually chase us down the line. We bolted as fast as we could, but it was hard to get away because I was laughing so much, and I now definitely know not to do that again. And yeah, that is the story of the time I officially met this unknown boy I now proudly call my best friend. And of course, how I got over some childhood trauma, but yeah, that's just a minor thing.
That's fabulous. That's a great story. Great story. Okay, so the kids go to door to door just like they do in the United States, except they only wear masks, no costumes. And instead of saying trick or treat, they sing songs for candy.
Yep.
So can you give us a 10-second sample of one of those songs?
Oh, God, yeah, sure.
Really?
Okay. There's this short one that goes, St. Martin, St. Martin, the koeien hebben staart, and the meisjes hebben rokjes aan, daar komt St. Martinus aan.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Right. That translates into boo, boo, I'll scare you on this Halloween night Ooh, okay, good.
Sure.
All right. Very good. And if anybody you want to skateboard with Ola, write to us on Facebook. This is Hank Rubicek with Tatiana Gago, and you are listening to stories composed and conveyed by some extraordinary exchange students. Audrey, Mario, Pooh, Maddie, Pearl, Ola, Adolfo, and Paul Topeki. And by the way, I'm mentioning first names not because I'm afraid of your last, but because I want to save some time. Mr. Paul Topeki. And on. So what's your story? Only on Pacifica, KPFT 90.1 in Houston, 89.5 on the island, and 91.9 in Huntsville. Now, Tatiana, you are a senior at UHD, the most diverse university west of the Mississippi, so I'd like you to weigh in on this a little bit. How do these types of stories help us become more tolerant of each other?
Well, I think, although you're coming from, like, different countries or faraway land, I think you're always able to find something in common with each other, and come to learn something new about each other, and even meet some interesting characters along the way.
Beautiful. And you're a good student. I know I've said that a lot.
I try to be.
Really, well, you are. Tatiana's, I've known Tatiana for some time, and she is really an example of one of the best that UHD can possibly produce. That's
Thank
the
you.
Truth. You know, that's beautifully said, because I know that, and I've said this to all of you earlier before the show, that differences really are blessings and not constraints. But there's no constraints in the world of Houston storytelling, right?
Right you are. And let's start with our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, because it's a great place to learn how to construct a story and how to learn by listening to a story, thanks to the supportive members who make up the guild. They meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. The Guild not only sponsors our program, but hosts some great events, so be sure to visit their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org for information about all of the great stuff coming up. And while you're checking things out on the Guild's page, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under radio program. There are over 400 stories, so you better get started. Yeah. Don't own a radio? That's no problem, because you can listen to a stream live on kpft.org and on our Facebook Live. And remember our friends at the Moth. At Warehouse Live, the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy moving stories about a variety of themes.
Yes, next month it will be Love Hurts. Love Hurts.
Can't relate.
Yeah. You never heard that song. I can't sing, but nevertheless, yes.
And you also will get acquainted with Houston's vibrant storytelling community. Dr. Hain, aren't you teaching a class you want us to know?
Yes. Thank you, first of all, for your ridiculously thorough report. You always do that for us. I'm teaching a short course on how to construct a personal narrative at the Women's Institute on February 4th, 11th, and 18th from 1 to 3 p.m. You can register online or give them a call at 713-529-7123. It's a great place, great people, and a great friend of the program. Tonight is actually a first of I consider to be a two-program sequence. Next week, Eric Heen is going to be guest hosting, and Eric is right here. Tell us a little bit about what we have in store.
Oh, hi, Dr. Hank. Yeah, next week we're going to have a program on the plight of refugees.
Yeah.
And we'll have some refugees here from all four corners of the world, Africa, Middle East, Vietnam, I think. And they'll be going over how and why they fled their countries, about their journey over here and their experiences once
Beautiful.
They arrived here.
So. Yeah, and thank you, Eric. And, you know, we have to do more of these kind of shows. We really do. That's what we're all about. We're all about diversity. We're looking forward to that. And remember, it will be on Thursday, January 17th. So start thinking Thursday. Now, Audrey is a senior harpist at the Kinder School for Performing and Visual Arts. She visited Japan for the first time last summer and will be a freshman at Rice this fall, studying engineering and Asian studies. Too bad she's not ambitious. She also has been a host sister. Audrey, what's the most important thing that you learned about being a host sister?
I think definitely the most important thing I learned is to communicate. I think there are lots of times where we thought our like feelings, how we felt about each other were implied, and it led to lots of misunderstandings. So, and we could have become closer faster if we had explicitly stated like what we thought was going on.
Yeah, being clear is so important, isn't it? It is so clear, so important. You know, reflections on changes that evolve, causing someone to feel less foreign, I think is the inspiration behind your story. Share it with us.
So my visit to Japan was by far the most important 3 weeks of my entire life. I understand this is a pretty bold claim to make, but let me explain. Before I arrived in Japan, my top priority was to create a close and long-lasting relationship with my host family, which consisted of my oka-san, or mom, my baba and oji-san, or grandma and grandpa, my little sisters Mi-chan and Nanase, and my little brother Tatsuki. A little background information about me. Although the Myers-Briggs personality test identifies me as an introvert, I will continually venture outside of my comfort zone in order to build new relationships, friendships, and even families. What makes the human race so unique compared to other species is our ability to pass knowledge down across generations, originally through poems and songs and epics. Because of this, I am overjoyed at every opportunity I get to talk to someone new. I feel so interconnected in that moment to this ancient exchange of ideas, connecting me to people existing not just today, but also thousands of years ago and from now. So knowing this about me, it explains why my most important experiences in Japan took place during seemingly mundane interactions. For example, I'll never forget spending a solid hour sitting on the floor with Nanase, playing with about a cubic inch of purple clay, making into a variety of cute, tiny animal shapes. I love seeing her smiling face as we imagine the clay animals navigating mountains as we bounce them across the pillows strewn across the living room couch. I'll never forget eating ramen from the 7-Eleven across the street from my house when Mi-chan, in a sudden burst of desire to demonstrate her extensive knowledge of the English language, blurts out, "Oh my god," and nothing else. I'll also never forget when Tatsuki kept putting cicada shells on my back while we were visiting a temple or making breakfast with my host grandma. Also, one seemingly ordinary drive to the onsen, which, for those of you who don't know, is a Japanese bathhouse, like a public bathhouse. So, like, I went there with my host family, who I met, like, 3 days ago, and we took all our clothes off and then, like, took a shower and then got in a big public hot tub together. So we got close pretty fast. So on the way to the onsen, I gazed at the brushstrokes of the mountain scenery flying by, and I suddenly realized I would never experience this ever again. Although my dream since middle school has been to live and work in Japan after I graduate, I will not be the same person when I'm living there, with the same thoughts and feelings the next time. Seeing how small I was compared to the mountains, I realized the world we live in is truly vast and filled with endless potential. Itsudemo kyou ga ichiban tanoshii hi. Today is always the most enjoyable day. In that instant, I keenly felt how short life is, that trying to make every moment perfect and feeling inevitably disappointed is a waste of time. Every day is beautiful just the way it is, from the sun filtered through the tree leaves to the sounds of late-night traffic as people flow from place to place seeking connection. Perhaps this is the stuff of a later midlife crisis, but I want to pay attention now. On my last morning with my host family in Japan, I went outside with my sisters to blow bubbles. Those few moments at the end of the most life-changing 10 days were soft and dreamlike as we watched the incandescent, almost glass-like bubbles drifting towards the sky. Many seem to believe an invisible wall exists between America and other nations, and that people from each place are inherently different. While unique values and cultures undoubtedly shape people, on some level, we are all the same. In my time with this host family, the wall disappeared, if any such wall had ever been there. Before, I saw Japan as an outsider would. Looking back, it seems a two-dimensional image in my mind. Being a part of a Japanese family brought this flat image to life, with dimension and subtlety. My perspective completely shifted. What I had only ever read about in books, such as Obon Motsuris and ordinary Japanese high schools, I now attach to real experiences. Now when I think of a Japanese high school, I don't see a facade. I can hear the world history teacher giving a lecture on English imperialism, taste the obento that my host grandmother made for me, and see myself connecting and building new relationships with my classmates and my host family. Thank you.
Oh, that was so beautiful, and I love the fact that you're focusing on communication. You're not suggesting that you're experiencing a midlife crisis, are you?
Oh, no.
Thank God. Good, because it's bad enough that I'm old, according to Pooh. Right? Wherever he is, he probably ran away. He knows I'm going to get him. Okay. Communication is really one of the most underrated variables in terms of human interaction. Just a real quick notion, you know, we are number 34 in the world in terms of literacy. When I was born, apparently 2 centuries ago, according to Pooh, we were number 3 in literacy. We have really been spiraling down. And I think that your point is very well taken. Storytelling, just for the record, so we all know, was the first mode of expression. It occurred and was first measured in 2000 BC. The idea of people having to look at each other and sharing complete thoughts and ideas is something we really take for granted. What's one thing we should take from your story?
I think that people seem to see other countries as completely separate from us, but we're all human beings. We all cry at sad movies, crack inside jokes, stress about tests. So I think it's important to remember that while we should always celebrate our differences and what we can learn from each other, we're all human beings, so we should always empathize and learn from each other.
Beautiful point. Paul, I'm just letting you know, we got to get everybody back because I'm frustrated. There are too many things to talk about. Too many things. Maddie, you are a junior at Katie's Tompkins High School. You studied abroad in the Philippines last year and plans to study in another country during your senior year. Where do you want to go next?
I don't know where next year will take me, but I hope I can go somewhere in South America.
South America. Beautiful. Your plans to be an exchange student is very disclosing, I think, based on what I know of you and based on your story in some ways. Either that or you can't wait to get out of town. but your story illustrates what I consider to be some pretty acute observational skills as you home in on some daily tasks which are laced with cultural rituals. I find this a little humorous. And the sorts of things that we take for granted, right?
Right.
Tell us your story.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about a time I felt really out of place and really like a foreigner while living in the Philippines. So as soon as I got there, I noticed a lot of differences between me and Filipinos, mostly in the ways we communicate. For example, Filipinos make duck lips to point in a certain direction, while in the Philippines we usually use our fingers to point. I mean, in the United States, my bad. So all of these were easy habits for me to adapt to. But there were just some things I had never done before. I wasn't used to them at all. So after about 2 weeks of living in the Philippines, I had to learn how to take a bucket shower, which I'm not going to lie, I was pretty nervous about, probably because the idea of continuously pouring cold water over my head sounded pretty awful. So what happened was I was at my host family's land, which is where my extended family was living. And we had just come back from swimming in a nearby river, and I was going to stay the night with my family. So I needed to take a shower, right? Because we just got done swimming. So my ate, which means older sister, she kind of shoved me into this bathroom with just a large bucket, a large empty bucket, and a pail, which I was supposed to use to pour the water over my head. And then she left, and I didn't know where she went. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. So I was just standing there for a good 5 minutes. Waiting for something to happen. I don't really know what I was waiting for, but I was just standing there. And so, keep in mind, I had no idea what I was doing. I just thought I was taking a shower. So, all of a sudden, my ate, she comes back, and she hands me another bucket of water. And I'm still standing there panicking because I still don't know what to do with this water in this pail, just standing there in the dark. And so I asked her, I was like, so do I just pour this water over my head? And she's like, yeah, that's what you do, right? And I was like, oh, yeah, I knew that, totally. And so for the next, like, 5-10 minutes, I stand there trying to find the strength to pour this water over my head. It was freezing out. It was probably around 11 at night, and the water was just pumped from the well that was also cold. Eventually, I poured the water over my head. I took a shower, and honestly, I don't know why I was overreacting so much. It's not a big deal. It's just taking a shower. But it's really these small cultural differences of something that I had never had to experience in the United States that made me so nervous, even though it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big deal to them. It's something they do all the time. So, I mean, eventually I took a shower. Yeah.
So taking a bucket shower was not on your bucket list.
I think that's
no, come on. None of you thought about that one? What, I'm that smart? Yeah, right. Give me a break. You know, I told you in a joking way, but it's true that my idea of roughing it is when room service is late. I think that we really are kind of mildly obnoxious Americans, no?
Yeah.
Kinda, yeah, you know. We're ethnocentric. It's a real term.
Really?
It means that we are innately feeling that our culture is somehow superior. And we think the entire world should perhaps even speak English. You know, years ago, I went to Europe with a friend of mine, and I remember I was looking for the American Express office. And I remember turning to someone who knew absolutely no English. And I thought that if I asked slowly, they would know where it was. I would say, "Where is the American Express office?" As if you don't know English, that would help. Right?
Right.
And where's the soda machine? What do you mean we're getting one towel a week? There are all sorts of things that happen as we're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
What can you not live without, though? That's what I want to know. What can you not live without?
Okay, so...
Don't say your phone, you know. Give me something.
Well, I mean, I was about to say that.
Oh, I know. I know. Let's just say I nipped it in the butt-skaruski. Yes. So, yeah, other than the phone, because that would have been... But what's one thing you just can't live without?
Well, my friend gave me this ring that I'm actually wearing right now. It's a small silver ring that has leaves coming out the side of it.
It is very beautiful.
Yeah, she gave it to me before I left for the Philippines, and it was already pretty hard because I had moved away from her a year before I left. And so this ring really meant a lot for me. It was just kind of our little piece of each other before I left.
And that kind of connection is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to think about that once in a while, I think.
Is.
It really is. Now, Mario is a returning exchange. Mario, you're a returning exchange student, right? And you studied in Japan for nearly a year. You're a junior at Clements High School. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And you are, I love this story, and there's a reason I wanted you to go last, because I really wanted you to bring it together by talking about teamwork, all right? Teamwork. But in your case, you're going to be sharing a story that deals with not only the story itself, but something you're doing at Clements, because you convey what you've learned in leadership clubs, including the Japanese National Honor Society and the Clements Yosaki dance team. At least that's how I am told you pronounce it. No? Yes?
It's pronounced Yosakoi.
Okay. You know, you could very easily say, yeah, that's brilliant. Okay, just letting you know. Okay, Yosakoi is done at various festivals.
Yes.
Yosakoi. Very good. I believe. How would you describe the dance?
So Yosakoi, the word comes from Old Japanese meaning come at night, and it is highly influenced by folk music and folk dance from southern Japan, but it also combines more modern music and dance.
Yeah.
And it focuses on using wooden clappers called naruko that make a little clacking sound when you flick your wrist.
Beautiful. Now, and again, what impressed me about your story, Mario, is that it centers on what you do so successfully at Clements and getting others involved, right? Tell us that story.
So I guess my story begins right around this time 2 years ago at Clements when I joined the Clements Yosakoi dance team. Like I said, it's a dance from southern Japan. It's not very well known in the U.S. And when I told my host mom in Japan that I'd been on a Yosakoi team at my school, she said, "Oh, no way. I have a close friend who's the leader of a team in the town over, and one thing led to the other, and they said they'd be more than glad to have me," and I joined a Japanese Yosakoi team, which is how I ended up in the middle of nowhere, in a Japanese elementary school auditorium surrounded by people I had just met and couldn't communicate with and was now supposed to dance with. And it was a family team called Anjo Hokuto. And so because it was a family team, it had both genders and age range all the way from preschool to senior citizens. But by far the biggest demographic, I think, was middle-aged women who I had a really hard time connecting with. And I wasn't sure what they thought of me, and that really bothered me a lot. And the first thing I felt was very shy. But there was one family, the Tanaka family, and they would always give me rides so I didn't have to ride my bike to practice. And while they were giving me these rides, they'd ask me a lot about what life was like in America and what it was like to be an exchange student. And I could tell that they were really glad to have the opportunity to get to know me. And so I felt really glad to get to know them. They're first people outside of my host family that I really talked to. And so we've built a pretty close friendship. And building off that friendship, I also felt a little bit more comfortable at practice, and I got to talk to some of the other team members and build some more friendships. And we became a team. And soon enough, after I'd practiced, we started performing at not only small festivals, but we also went to the biggest festival where the dance originated in southern Japan, in Kochi, the Kochi All Japan Yosakoi Festival. And so we paraded down the streets of Kochi under the baking sun, and when the sun went down, and it got cooler, they turned on these huge lights, the music went up really loud, and we paraded down the streets of Kochi one last time. And I won an individual award then, supposedly, for showing enthusiasm, but I'm pretty sure it had to do with the fact that I was, you know, the only foreigner.
Right.
And since I was having so much fun and interacting with my team so much, I think I improved on my Japanese more. And so when I got to communicate easier, my life got easier. And when life is easy but not only fun, time flies a lot faster. And so before I knew it, it was December. By the way, the Japanese school year starts and ends in March, so my time was coming sort of to an end. And I wanted to show my team that I was appreciative of all they had done for me. So I went to Don Quixote, which is like a one-stop buy-all in Japan. And that's how I showed up to practice one December night, dressed up as Santa and handing out fruitcake to my team. And before I knew it, the last month of my exchange had slipped through my fingers. After my last performance, they threw me a really good goodbye party. And I promised them that I would spread interest in this dance that's not very well known, Yosakoi, in the United States. And then my last week of exchange passed, and I went to the train station to go home to America. And I was really touched by the fact that almost the whole team showed up at the station, you know, 40, 50 people, just to say goodbye to me. And so I got back to America, and I felt like I could really do anything. If I could have joined this dance team, then I could really do anything. And I felt really good to get back to my dance team in Clements High School. And whenever I danced Yosakoi, I felt kind of sad that I missed my team in Japan, but also I felt happy that I had this really great experience. And I guess that's why I was chosen to be the president this year of the Clements Yosakoi dance team, which I think brings me where I am here on this radio broadcast, trying to spread interest in this dance. Yosakoi, Yosakoi. If you're interested, please Google it. Or come out to see me and my dance team, I believe this March, at the Houston Japan Festival. Be great to see you out there. I think that's it for my story.
Beautiful. True or false? None of us are as good as all of us.
All of us are the best together.
There you go. Beautiful. Love that. You know, we're running out of time, and this is, without question, one of the most frustrating shows that I've done. For all the right reasons. You guys absolutely rock. You guys are fabulous. Did you have a good time, everybody?
Yeah.
All right. In alphabetical order, I want to thank Adolfo, Audrey, Maddie, Mario, Ola, Pearl, and Pooh, and to Paul Topekian for bringing all of you here through your beautiful stories. Each of you demonstrated eloquently that tolerance begins with open-mindedness. The peace we feel in our hearts is what we get from accepting and acceptance. All of you portrayed exactly the mission of this program, to plug each other through the power of story. You are an awesome lot. A little bit of a departure from our usual outro, going with the very appropriate, given tonight, Stevie Winwood and Higher Love. You guys are absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for being here, and I want you on again. Don't you dare move, because the very talented Flash Gordon Parks is up next. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, We never want you to forget that, everyone. It's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. See you next Thursday at 8.
Grand Parade, Monday, January 21st, beginning at 10 a.m. in Midtown Houston. This year's theme, It Takes a Village, featuring 40 nationally recognized marching bands from across the nation, led by the world-famous Langston University Marching Band of Langston, Oklahoma. The MLK Grand Parade, Monday,